From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.
Welcome to Postcard from Portbrad, boys and girls. It's nearly Christmas time, which we'll come on to in a minute. My name's Eric Wiltshire. We're at the base of the glorious Tatry Mountains over here in Slovakia. That's the reason why we called the programme Postcard from Portbrad, because we're in Portbrad. Well, not all of us, you understand, just me. And over on the zit of the nose of Europe is none other than Mr. Lee Banks.
Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and anybody else who's listening. Welcome to the Village of the Damned, the place where my ancient home stands, haunted and despairing. Not for me, the brown stairs of Parisian stairways, or the clucking fair maidens of the Popradian mountains. No, I am the one who must endure, the red-top crusader who must face the elements alone.
Has he finished? Oh, has he done it? Has he finished?
No. Now it's page three now. We've got to go over things.
You're on page three.
And over on the doggy doo-doo centre of the world, in Gay Paris, it is the co-founder of the Consumer Action Group, Mark Gander.
Hello there. Yes, here we are in, once again, Grey Paris, because it is grey, really. Well, I mean, it's grey in the sky and brown on the ground and...
Is it 50 Shades of Grey?
It's 50 Shades of Brown, I can tell you that. Those woofers. And the only thing I can say
is... And your tweeters.
And the tweeters, and it's so cold, at least it just goes crunch underfoot.
That's disgusting.
It is disgusting.
That's like a deep-fried Mars bar.
Oh, stop it. Anyway, let's say hello to the guys at Talk Radio X, especially all those nice people at Replay Radio. We'll talk more about that later. You guys on RTI and Audio Boo, and just about anywhere else that we happen to be, which I keep finding more places thereof. But anyway, you're welcome wherever you are. This is the alternative sideways look at the news and a few rants from three old geezers. We start off with the tragedy news of the week, as usual. And for the first time in weeks, I actually know somebody, which is a bit of a result, really, for me.
Well, you don't know him anymore.
Exactly, that's right. You did know him.
Ah, true.
Yes.
Are we going to be in picky mode today?
Do you mean you know him, or you know who he was?
I know who he was.
All right, so you never knew him?
No. We are being in picky mode today, aren't we?
Yeah. We're just getting clear, you know.
Okay. Okay, it's going to be one of those boys and girls. What was his name now? Oh, yes, Larry Hagman. Better known for playing J.R. Ewing, who was the star of Dallas.
He wasn't the star.
He was the cowboy. He was the star.
He was the star. He was the star.
Oh, I loved
him. Who has shifted him off this mortal coil now?
He couldn't act. He was a terrible actor. All he was famous for was
drinking. We didn't say whether he's a good actor or not. He's a star.
Mark, you're right. Is this all a dream and it's going to come back and haunt us?
Exactly, and Mark's going to get shot.
next Easter, there's going to be a resurrection.
Yeah.
Have you had one? I don't have to wait for Christmas.
Stop it. We're supposed to be being nice.
Naughty.
Yes, you were very naughty.
About Larry
said that naughtily.
He did.
I did say that naughtily. Yes. It's very sad that Larry Hagman, that man who was known more for drinking and smoking than he was for his acting ability, has shuffled off this mortal coil. And what a good accolade that is for drinking and smoking. He made it to 81.
Stardom stuff. Actress Dinah Sheridan.
Now, that is a tragedy.
Which is a bit of a tragedy, because I vaguely remember this one. She was in the Railway Children, which... Yeah. I can't even say.
Dangerous if you do know in the Railway Children, isn't
and
it?
Yes, and Genevieve, which is all about an old-fashioned car.
That was a good thing. What's it about a car, you silly Billy?
Isn't that a wonderful name, Genevieve?
Who?
Was it about a car?
Genevieve's a car.
Oh, he says I'm thinking of the wrong film. I'm so sorry, Dinah Sheridan.
Chitty Bang Bang.
No, Genevieve.
You said that wrongly.
Wrongly. Sorry. Before the programme, boys and girls, we were having adjectives, adverbs, and all sorts of other things being bounced
just
around.
Adverbs.
Adverbs as well.
Yes.
So Lee is now an adverb. Yes,
I am now an adverb, and Mark is a vowel. Vowel! Sorry, vowel!
Vowel. Val.
Slowly, slowly.
Yes, careful here. So anyway, but Dinah Sheridan was 92 years young.
That's her name, right?
There was a song after her, actually.
Was there?
Yes, Dinah.
And stop it, not go there. She also played in Doctor Who, which takes her standing with me way up, in the film The Five Doctors.
The Five Exercise, I remember that film. Doctor Who film. That, how many films did they make of Doctor Who? One.
Yeah, I think so.
So she was the one who played Chancellor Flavia.
Yes.
Surely.
I don't think there was any more than one. Also, Martin Richards, who was behind, apparently, the Broadway hit Sweeney Todd. Whatever that means, I have no idea.
Well, you never seen Sweeney Todd?
No.
The man who used to turn people into meat and potato pies. I love a meat. That's right.
Who was the name? Who was the owner of the shop behind, the lady who actually made them?
No, she was next door.
That was Mr. Pilkington.
Don't believe a word he says today, boys and girls. But apparently, he's died at the age of 80. And I'm sorry, sir.
I know everybody's doing well, isn't they?
They are. What's going to happen?
That means that you've got at least another 15 years left.
Ha, 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 ha.
What's wrong, 65? That wasn't bad. That wasn't much of an insult, was it?
Thank you.
That was only a little insult.
He said that very cheekily.
He did say that very cheekily, like he is everything else. Quick bit of housekeeping here. Just to let you, the guys know on Replay Radio, the station is currently on holiday, so you get us and various other bits until...
Brilliant!
...round about March 2013. So you get wall-to-wall RTI. We're providing the sustaining service to Replay Radio and very many of their sister stations as well. But I would like to encourage you, via whatever station you're listening to, they can get in touch with us. We are putting together a Christmas special, which is going to be musical, and it's going to run on 14 stations so far. So if you'd, if you'd like to say hi to family and friends via Skype, or we'll Skype you, don't worry about that, or via an email MP3, do get in touch with your station, or get in touch with us directly via Facebook, and we'll include you, hopefully, in a Christmas special. Christmas. Well, there might be too many, Mark. There could be too many.
We've been in that position before when we've had too many, haven't we?
We have.
I don't know about that.
So, the RTI Christmas special will be going out on currently 14 stations. You never know, it might swell to more. And if you want to be in that, do let us know and we'll include your message in there, providing Lee can sit still.
That
sounds great fun. Fell out again.
I know, indeed.
Can I just say something about that?
What?
Well, you know that I'm an adjective and Mark's a vowel.
No,
right?
You're an adverb, Lee.
Oh, I'm an adverb. Sorry, I'm an adverb. He's a vowel, right? And you,
who?
Mr. Wiltshire,
oh, right.
You, Mr. Wiltshire,
yeah.
You
yeah.
are a sexist.
Really?
Because you said
what?
Sister
what?
Stations.
What?
Sister stations.
What detrimental
well, why can't they
woman?
Be brother and sister stations?
What detrimental woman said I was sexist? How
anyway,
dare
it
she?
It would be stationess anyway, wouldn't it? I mean, really
well, it would cool. be yes.
Yeah, stationess.
Yes.
The brotherhood of yeah. Why yeah. can't why is the station called a sister?
Because they're in a sorority.
True.
Because everybody at the BBC's gay.
Okay.
I don't think this is the time to talk about that kind of thing.
No, I don't think so either. Anyway, some good news. Good news, which is close to my heart, has to be said.
Close to mine.
And yours. Stalking has now become a specific criminal offence in England and Wales this week, which is great news because it was already such in Scotland. It didn't help me when the Scottish idiot came after me before. But anyway, they changed the law up in Scotland in 2010. So now the whole of the UK has got a harmonised stalking law. And that,
it is.
That's got to be a good thing.
Yes.
Can I reiterate, give an update on my own stalking experience?
Without naming names, yes.
You've been stalked?
Yes.
No, I've been stalking.
Oh, you've been stalking?
No, he's
no,
been...
no, he said, no, I have been stalked. And, I could name him, but...
No, you won't.
Are you the stalker or stalkee?
He's
the
stalkee,
mate, yeah. Right. And
Lee, did you say stalkee? Was that reference to living in the old store?
No, I've just remembered. That's a holiday resort down south, isn't it, Stalkee? But... No, seriously, I've got to say this.
Go on.
It's an important point to people who've suffered the way that you and I have. Mm. And you and I have both suffered this. I've suffered it with a woman. He suffered it with a man, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank
but
you.
I suffered it with a woman. And my stalker stalked me for 5 years now. It has actually stopped. And that's why I want to tell people how it actually stopped. She was cautioned by the police 4 times. And threatened with all sorts of mayhem, but nothing was ever done about it. Mm. And it was a terrifying experience not to be able to go into your local town because you knew that you were either going to be followed, photographed, or this woman was going to accuse me of sexually assaulting her, which was an amazing thing to accuse me of, considering that I never ever went to that town without Andrea by my side. But anyway, I got that fed up with the fact that the police wouldn't do anything.
Careful. And if you're going where you think I think you're going, you're not going there.
What?
Because you're not going to do anything to stalkers. What you're going to do is tell everybody to be a sensible person and go to the police station.
Can I ask you a question about this?
No. I think it's absolutely relevant that I do say what I actually did. And I wasn't beating up or biffing my stalker or anything illegal. I did not commit any kind of illegal act on this. But I got that fed up with it, the fact that the police wouldn't do anything. And now they can actually do something, which is why it's relevant, because it's become a criminal offence. Mm-hmm. And I actually went round to my stalker's house, knocked on her door and told her husband what she was doing. And miraculously, it stops.
Yeah, that's not advisable for anybody else. So
that could be very, very dangerous. Can I just ask one question?
Well, do you go down with a witness?
You're in a position of being a man stalked by a woman.
Mm. Yeah.
And you tried to go to the police about this. I'm just wondering whether the police would be more likely to do something if there was a woman complaining about being stalked by a man. In other words, you know, and you get these laws, for instance, preventing domestic abuse and other sort of thing. But I always sort of feel that maybe it's more difficult for a man to complain because the attitude of the police might be maybe a bit old-fashioned. They say, yeah, well, you know, you're a man, you can take care of yourself. This can't be particularly serious, whereas if you're...
I take your point, and I know what you're saying, and I think you're right. But the problem is, it isn't the fact that the police think you're a man over this. What the danger is, the real danger is, and luckily my stalker was round the bend, or is round the bend.
Yeah.
And for her to say that whenever I went into the town, which I'm not going to name the town, that I either sexually molested her, followed her, or stood outside her school. The college where she was learning, wherever she was learning, that was the accusation that was made against me. Luckily, because I live a fairly bohemian life, and my young lady is always by my side when we go shopping or whatever like that, I was genuinely never went into that town or bumped into my stalker without Andrea literally being by my side. And that's what we're saying, going back to the other point, that I went around to that house with witnesses. So that there could be no trouble, and that people could see what I was doing.
Well, let me just do a bit of public service broadcast here, because I think this is important. Apparently, in England and Wales, it's estimated that 120,000 victims of stalking are there each year. And up until now, typically about 50 actually get to an offender being jailed. And the problem was, and this was the problem in Scotland as well, where in my case, there was no stalking law at all. So this idiot was only able to go before the prosecutor fiscal for what they call in Scotland breach, which in England is breach of the peace. He had 600 cases of breach, but there was no real sentence for him that could have been given out. And this was also the problem in the UK. Now, the interesting thing is that before the changes in Scotland, only 70 people were ever prosecuted over a 10-year period for stalking. But since 2010, that figure has soared to 443. Therefore, all I'm saying to you is out there, boys and girls, if you are suffering from a stalker, now the evidence is there that there will be a prosecution, so go talk to the police.
Absolutely, 100%. Also, the law has changed, and that's a good thing, because they actually caught my stalker on CCTV, circling me with a camera and photographing me. Andrea was there, absolutely ensconced at what was going on. She was on, and still the police wouldn't bring a prosecution against her.
Mm, ridiculous. Anyway, let's move along. This is really good news for an Eric, because I am a Spitfire anorak. and it is my dream to go flying one day. This amazing guy, a farmer, David, how do you say that, Kundal?
Kundal, you say Kundal. It very carefully.
Kundal. David Kundal has been working for 16 years with his own money to actually go find some buried Spitfires that he'd heard about. And the good news is he's found them.
I know, and it's not as daft as it sounds when he spends his own money looking for them, is it, when you realise what price they are?
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, you know, if it succeeds, he's going to have a fantastic return on this.
Yeah, well, he's going to make lots of money.
What a great project.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But he spent 130 grand of his own money so far to track these down. Yeah. And he was told by a US vet that these planes have been buried years
ago. How much are they worth each?
Well, it depends on the condition. You can't say at the moment.
See a figure. I've forgotten what it is.
Well, what you've got to remember is that Spitfires were not metal objects in the true sense of the word. They were basically tissue paper and wood.
Well, that's not to be sleazed at.
Ha, ha, ha.
I've seen Spitfire once.
Go on.
What do you mean, go on?
Go on. How big was it?
Are you asking if he was excited at the sight?
No.
Listen, carry on. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Yeah, I was going to go down the model streak, which we're coming to later in the programme. But anyway, I think considering the amount of aircraft that are now airworthy with certification, for this gentleman, David, I think you're a star. I wish you all the best with it, and I hope you get as many of them out of the crates as possible. And it will be a bit of a painstaking job, but I can assure you there are millions of people around the world that will love what you're doing. So I congratulate you immensely.
And what a good man he is for being that kind of gung-ho Englishman that goes out and takes on something which on the surface, it isn't actually on the surface, is it? It was under the ground. Mm. But on the surface looks like a completely harebrained scheme. Well done.
Well done, that man, I think. Right, moving along. Before we start the next piece, Lord Justice Leveson was on the television, he was on radio. I looked at 20 different countries yesterday where this report was being broadcast literally all over the place. We picked out just 1.5 minutes of it. The beginning of the clip and a piece at the end where Lord Justice Leveson, in my opinion, says something. I won't say any more for a minute, but this is 1 minute 34 of the 15-minute statement of Leveson yesterday.
Although I make some recommendations in this area, it is absolutely not my role to seek to establish a new press standards code or to decide how an independent self-regulatory body would go about its business. As to a standards code, I recommend the involvement of an industry committee, which could include and involve serving editors. That committee would advise the regulatory body, and there should be a process of public consultation. In my report, I also address the need for incentives to be put in place to encourage all in the industry to sign up to this new regulatory system. Guaranteed independence, long-term stability, and genuine benefits for the industry cannot be realised without legislation. So much misleading speculation and misinformation has been spread about the prospect of new legislation that I need to make a few things very clear. I am proposing it only for the narrow purpose of recognising a new, independent, self-regulatory system. It is important to be clear what this legislation would not do. It would not establish a body to regulate the press.
So what did we think of that then, boys?
Well,
hang on, you're biased. No, Mark.
Well, I mean, to say that I'm not biased, I don't know. I mean, I really thought that the press got very out of order on this whole episode, and I think that they've got something coming, and I think that, you know, I have to say that this seems to me to tread a middle ground. I mean, what it's doing, it seems to me, is making self-regulation compulsory. And it seems to me that what Leveson is basically saying there is that this is a final chance. We're going to compel you, and there will be some carrots. There's going to be some good reasons for you to get involved in this. But basically, we're going to compel you to regulate yourself according to sort of certain principles. But if you don't, then there's really going to be a serious stick. So I realise, of course, that, you know, this is only if, like, sort of the first step. It should have been the end of it, of course, but I understand that Cameron is already trying to say, no, we don't want to go along with this at all, and I think there's going to be a big debate in Parliament. Is that happening today? I'm not quite sure. I think it certainly shows the gravity of the whole situation, and I must say that hopefully it'll be a real kick for the media, that they realise that they're on the verge of losing independence if they don't sort themselves out.
Well, I need to qualify one thing before I bring Lee in, because, and this is a real misnomer, and somebody touched it onto it on Sky News, and Lee sit still last night, because the point is that the biggest majority of the media is already regulated anyway, and that's in terms of television and radio. Leveson also said that he didn't consider the internet to be within this, but just the print media. So what we've got to know and should know is that currently print media is outside of the law, whereas television and radio is within the law and can have all these wonderful fines. And what he also said is that if people join this body, then the amount of damages that they would pay out if they were found to be naughty children would be less than if they were outside of the body. Lee?
Well, it just depends what you want me to say, really. The simple fact is that the whole of the Leveson inquiry has been a complete farce, and its findings are neither one thing nor the other. And basically what's happened is the police and the government and ministers and high officials have all been subjected to a whitewash to make them look fine and dandy. And the press has been told off like a naughty little boy. Mm. The general feeling within the media, the press, mm-hmm. I've talked to a lot of people about it. And believe me, I do actually know what I'm talking about when it comes to the press, is that it will not make not one jot of difference to anything we will do and how we will handle stories in the future. What it actually is a bit of a writ for celebrities to protect themselves. The press itself will just carry on doing what it's always done. And to go back to what Mark's saying that the press has been naughty. Yeah, we have. That's the way it is. That's just the way the media operates. There is only a small section of the media which has been naughty and did some naughty things. The rest of the media, the bulk of the media, carried on doing what they should do. And I'm going back to what Eric said.
I'm going to butt in there, Lee, because you're absolutely right. Because one of the things I receive every month as it goes is how many broadcasters are told off for not getting it right, and they do suffer lots of fines. There are times when Ofcom sorts it out, and it's certain things are resolved, and people do face fines. But that doesn't mean to say that the rest of television and radio is a bad thing.
No, it's a high-risk business. It always has been. And the thing about the script, there is a real joke in this, a real stupid, bonkers, ridiculous joke. And Leveson is the joke. But in very simple terms, the media, right, the press, I'm talking about the press generally, as far as public scrutiny is concerned, you have to bear in mind that the public scrutiny takes place every single day of the press and what it does. Mm. That is what public scrutiny...
It's called how many people buy your stories, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to come in there.
Absolutely,
I don't think there has been this public scrutiny, because there is so much information revealed that the public really didn't know at all, you know, and it needed, unfortunately, this inquiry to do that. So actually, I think the problem is that because the press itself is responsible for subjecting itself to scrutiny, because the press is the one that actually, if you like, is the information gatherer and the information discloser, they also are the ones that are capable of keeping the keeping the lid on stuff that they don't want to be known.
Hang on, Mark. No, you're not disagreeing, but I'm going to come back in with just a couple of instances here. And it is true. I think the last time I bought a newspaper for news was, well, it would be decades ago. Genuinely decades ago. I'll buy a newspaper because one of my colleagues got something in there or they want a scan of it or something like that. And that leads me to ask the question. There's the bulk of people do not buy a newspaper every day around the world.
That's absolutely wrong.
No, it's not. And the figures...
I've actually got the facts and figures in front of me prove that point, because I knew that's the point you were going to make. I can prove that now.
Go on, then.
These are the latest figures, right, from the... I can't remember what it's called. The World Association of Newspapers and News Publishers. Mm-hmm. Right, that's the World Association. It's their latest figures of world press trends.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The figures are simple. On a daily basis, there are 2.5 billion people read a newspaper.
How many people live in the world?
Well, it doesn't make any difference.
How many people live in the world? It does. It's a percentage. It's the same as...
I'm not sure, actually. I'm not sure.
They reckon 7 billion. I mean, we just passed the 7 billion. How many... Two and a half billion.
2.5 billion. So a third of the world reads a newspaper.
Exactly. And that's
newspaper circulation between 2007 and 2011 has actually grown... by 4.2%.
Yeah, that doesn't matter, Lee. That wasn't the point I was going to make. The point is that if you've got two-thirds of the population that don't buy something, it is possible that the reason why a lot of these people didn't know what was going on, as Mark pointed out, is because they don't have a level of interest in it. And if they're not buying a newspaper, they're not really fussed as to whether a newspaper says vote this way, vote that way, buy this, buy that, because they genuinely are not there. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It's just a fact of statistics.
Yeah, a great bulk of the world are teetotal. That doesn't mean that the alcohol industry isn't a viable industry.
Well, I didn't
say
it wasn't.
You can't say it because people don't buy it, because two-thirds of the world don't buy it. What I'm saying is that 2.5 billion people a day read a newspaper. 2.5 billion people. And the digital platforms, which are there for newspapers now to move into, are what is being, at the moment... At the moment, the digital platforms can't support the advertising which newspapers need to stay alive. Yeah. And so, but ultimately, that's what newspapers will do. The Leafson inquiry is a joke. It's an absolute joke. Because for any grown-up man who was a judge... Mm-hmm. A judge, you know what the most famous thing he ever did was he prosecuted and lost against Ken Dodd, that famous comedian in Britain.
Well, that doesn't matter. But I think Mark.
One last point. Right, sorry, but I want to make this point. Right,
he does get stroppy.
Leafson has recommended that the press has an independent self-regulation. How does that work?
Because it's quite simple. Really simple.
You can't self-regulate if it's got to be independent.
Of course you can. It signs up.
I would have thought that. I would have thought that's the whole crux of independence, that you self-regulate.
Yeah.
And that you regulate...
That's not independent.
Well, it is, because you're talking about independence from what? You're talking about independence from political interference.
Yes, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
So what he's saying is it's got to be self-regulation so that it's not subject to Parliament, it's not accountable to Parliament, it's not accountable to government, and that makes it independent. It's clearly not going to be... Just a minute. It's clearly not going to be independent, I'm very pleased to say, of morality. It's not going to be independent of criminal behaviour. It's not going to be independent of the public interest as opposed to what is interesting to the public. All of those things, quite right, it won't be independent.
And that's where we leave part one, a postcard from Pop Brad, boys and girls. We'll be back fast and you make that milkshake, drink a cup of tea, or even get a cup of coffee.
This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world, the station of the stars.